Thank you, Mr. President. And thank you to the Madam Special Rapporteur for inviting me. I hope that my presentation will prove of use to this meeting. I am speaking on refugee and minority rights law, the frameworks, and while I have given my presentation to the interpreters, reading from a set text has always struck me as slightly boring, so my apologies to the interpreters in advance if I go off-piste. While refugee status determination is a very individualized and judicialized process in the global north, for the vast majority of persons seeking international protection, around about 86% of them, they are outside that region. Protection for them is very group-focused, and the grounds for persecution under the protection of refugees in international law, race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group and political opinion, mirror the recognized criteria for minority groups in international law. Of course, refugee status determination recognizes a far wider range of minorities than those listed in Article 27 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the 1992 UN Declaration on the Rights of Persons Belonging to National or Ethnic, Religious and Linguistic Minorities. However, given the intersectionality of discrimination that has already been noted by the High Commissioner for Human Rights and the Special Rapporteur, where women, members of the LGBTI community and persons with disability face even broader persecutory treatment as persons belonging to national or ethnic, religious and linguistic minorities, the need for a comprehensive approach to minority protection in international law in times of displacement arising from humanitarian crises cannot be gainsaid. Furthermore, there are other overlaps between the two frameworks for international protection surrounding nationality. Refugees must be outside their country of nationality or, if stateless, an unfortunately common experience for persons belonging to minority groups, their country of habitual residence. While the traditional understanding of minorities in international law would have them be nationals of the state. On that understanding, refugees would not, unless they moved to a state where they added to the members of a pre-existing minority group, fall within Article 27 or the 1992 Declaration. However, more contemporary thinking, first shown in the Human Rights Committee's General Comment 2350 in the 1990s, that stated that nationality was not a requirement that minorities had to meet. On that understanding, a refugee community could be a new minority to whom the state must extend the rights that protect their identity and promote their culture during their displacement. In terms of non-discrimination too, Article 3 of the 1951 Convention relating to the status of refugees and paragraph 2 of the Statute of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees both include non-discrimination as fundamental to international protection. Moreover, it is an essential aspect of providing humanitarian protection for persons displaced if one has regard to Article 70 of Additional Protocol 1 to the Geneva Conventions of 1977 or Article 18 of Additional Protocol 2 dealing with non-international armed conflicts, again to the Geneva Conventions of 1977. The provision of assistance has to be impartial in character. States need to ensure UNHCR's access to displaced communities and guarantee equal access to humanitarian relief. Finally, given the protracted nature of many situations of displacement, and when one talks of a protracted nature, the modal average is around 20 years. Access to education is a right for refugees, one that is especially important if they are to be in a position to obtain durable and sustainable solutions. Providing schools close to where the displaced community has located itself will improve protection, since children will be off the streets and at less risk. They will not have to travel long distances to get to a school where that is possible. if one builds schools close to the communities. Of course, many refugees also find themselves to be linguistic minorities in the country of refuge. In that regard, I know it's a regional approach, but it is one that provides an interesting set of guidelines and frameworks. The OSCE's Hague guidelines can provide that framework to facilitate protection through access to rights. As part of a research consultancy carried out for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in 2014-15 with Anna Magdalena Roush, where Anglophone teenagers fleeing Boko Haram in Nigeria had come to Niger, UNHCR facilitated distance learning programs so they could finish their education. Transfer to a Francophone system at that stage in their education would have been all but impossible. These again are processes that need to be implemented if one is going to provide proper respect for the rights of minorities, and that should include refugee populations. The causes of persecution and the consequences of flight mesh with the protection of minorities in international law. Upholding minority rights will reduce the number of those needing to flee in the first place and better guarantee their protection in those cases where flight was the only real option. One should remember at all times that nobody chooses to leave their place of normal residence. Nobody chooses to just walk away from their home. The need for international protection that is being given to UNHCR under its mandate is one that is so important, and one where refugee protection and minority protection overlap in such a way that this meeting is timely and essential, especially in the wake of the New York Declaration. I thank you, and I am sure that that is less than 7 minutes.